You're listening to New Mexico Filmworks on Talk 1260 KTRC with your host, Dirk Norris.
You're listening to New Mexico Filmworks on Talk 1260 KTRC Radio, brought to you by Hutton Broadcasting. New Mexico Filmworks is a program of the New Mexico State Film Office, and I'm your host, Dirk Norris. Later in the show, I'll be talking with Liz Langston about the 48-hour film project, and John Armijo will be talking to us about his experience with his first film. But here in the studio, I have Alejandro Montoya and Leonard Harris, both from Brother Bean Films, and we're talking about their Webisode film students. Alejandro was born in Laredo, Texas, raised in Merida, Yucatan, and Monterey, Mexico, where he began to do short films with friends and developed the need to pursue it and leave his own business marketing. He went to Vancouver, Canada, to VFS to study film production. There he worked on most of the positions available and got to direct and write the short film Warehouse Games, which was accepted to the New Filmmakers Film Festival. He came to Albuquerque and wrote and directed Intrepido, short film that was accepted to several film festivals, including Holly Shorts Film Festival, Albuquerque Film Festival, Great Lakes Film Festival, and won Best Director at the Colorado Film Festival. He acted in the web series Film Students, which got him the opportunity to act in the feature film Biomass as one of the lead actors, and now works on several music videos and have done for bands like Sleigh Bells, Chiquita Violet, Steve Klenke, and Alien Society. And Leonard Harris, give us a little of your background.
Well, I am originally from Detroit, Michigan, and I moved out here not really to pursue film, more to get away from Detroit, Michigan. And now I am here working in the film industry kind of piecemeal. I work for a staging company, Quick Beam, as well as for the casinos running camera and stuff. And other than that, I work on films and projects with this gentleman here, Alejandro.
And where did you two meet?
We met on the set of your movie, Intrepido, right?
Yeah. We dated for a couple of weeks.
Yes. He was such a tease. Friends, such
right? No, immediately yeah, saw a spark happening.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it did kind of start that way because I said some pretty incendiary things about him in the outtakes, the bloopers they were recording, just teasing him.
Right.
And it caught his attention, to say the least, because when the another project that we were loosely related to, what was that one?
The commercial.
No. The movie, Dragon Slayer.
Oh, yeah.
When Dragon Slayer premiered
you guys
a couple
on
years
Dragon
ago.
Slayer?
I did, and he did sporadically, but
right.
When it premiered, we caught up to each other again and had some drinks and all friendship.
And then from
ever
there,
since.
It was just that we just started hanging out every night.
Yeah, right. Well, many of those nights.
How long have each of you been in Albuquerque?
I've been here for 3 years.
I've been here since 2001, so 11 now.
Right.
11 years.
Yeah, I'm a lifer now.
And Alejandro, you have kind of a background in film. You have formal training in film?
I went to VFS, Vancouver Film School, where I met Ryan Halsey, who's the not only the DP that we always use, friend and co-founder of Brother Bean, but also the manager at Sirius Grippage and Light. We met there and then worked together on a couple of short films. I produced his, and then we just, after graduating, we moved to Albuquerque.
Mm-hmm. And do you both work at Sirius Grippage?
When he needs an extra pair of hands.
Ah, okay.
I come in and hang out and bum their water off because I ride my bike right by there every day. So,
hey, Leonard, give us a hand. I'm thirsty.
Yeah, I'm going to get some water and get out of here. Yeah.
And do they have some studio space? Are you using studio space there?
They have a sound stage.
They have a sound stage next door, but I don't know what the current status of that is, if they're selling or not. I don't know.
Yeah. And do you know how business is for them? There has been a little bit of a slowdown, kind of a lull in the last year or so in the film industry in New Mexico.
Well, I can't really say for certain, right? But I know for the first half of the year when a bunch of movies were here and short projects and, you know, whatever independent projects, I know they were pretty busy right now since I think the only big project is Lone Ranger. I don't even know if they're still here right now.
Yeah.
Are they?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I know one of the things that I've observed recently, since the bigger projects have kind of left town, some of the longer tenured people are kind of moving on, maybe to other states and places. But the indie community, the younger folks mm-hmm. who are just kind of getting their feet wet and were introduced into filmmaking mm-hmm. by being in Albuquerque mm-hmm. already, or, you know, coming like they did from film school, they're starting to kind of build a bond and create a bond and kind of form a foundation that I'm hoping, you know, they can grow something that can sustain itself out here.
Yeah, and I have always been a big proponent of New Mexico creating a film industry within the state and,
right.
and growing it. And that will come, I think, from the independent filmmakers that are in the state. Albuquerque, Santa Fe, and other places. Las Cruces has some really great things going on as well. Mm-hmm. But what is it going to take for these guys to really be able to take off, do you think?
Jesus, give the independent people more opportunities, commercials, music videos, maybe TV. Not only a film is already established here by, you know, by Marvel or whoever, Universal, mm-hmm. maybe give the state a couple more opportunities, like maybe for TV shows, since, you know, In Plain Sight already left and mm-hmm. Breaking Bad leaves in a couple of months. I know that, what's the name of that Wyoming cowboy?
Longmire.
Mm-hmm. Longmire is mm-hmm. the only, right now, I think, the only TV show because Vegas moved.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I think just giving more opportunities to the independent community, and not just only for like the like PAs and mm-hmm. second ADs, but you know mm-hmm. higher up positions as well. You know, because there's a lot of talented people here. You
Absolutely.
Meet them every day.
Yeah, and one of the things that keeps being mentioned is just an influx of more money. You know, having mm-hmm. more production money brought into the state to be able to do some of this stuff.
Yeah. Well, I think. Indicative of the problem is like the decision the tourism board made to have the outside that Texas-based company do the advertising for the mm-hmm. state of New Mexico tourism board. Those sort of things, I think, kind of bit the community a little bit and kind of stung, because those seem to be the type of opportunities that New Mexico
independent filmmakers.
Filmmakers should be able to kind of get a jump on, or maybe get a better opportunity to do, at least to try and fail, but to try. And
right.
something like that, when the money kind of came down to the line and they said, okay, who's going to make the best product, they chose to look elsewhere rather than give an opportunity to one of the up-and-comers.
Is that because Texas always grows every year because of the low taxes and new businesses start all the time in Texas? Or, I mean, I don't know. I'm asking.
Yeah.
Or is
well, there's, you know, for this product, and I can't speak specifically to it, but for, you know, there's a specific process, and New Mexico filmmakers or New Mexico businesses mm-hmm. get, you know, a 5-point bump in the rating system. So, you know, it's a big, long process. And can't say, you know, anybody said no, we're not going to use New
right Mexico. I'm not saying it to be combative at all. I just think, or I had hoped when I heard about the opportunity,
that is a great opportunity.
Like, yes,
for
that would
here.
Have been great if
right.
somebody from
and
got
subsequently
it, you know?
There have been other state commercials that mm-hmm. have used local people, the
yeah.
DOT,
oh,
did,
yeah, absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Stuff, and that will continue.
Absolutely. And I really, you know, there's two sides of both coins.
Sure.
I would agree to even say that New Mexicans and the independent community need to step up
mm-hmm.
and do, you know, step up.
Do
be
more.
A more
do,
creative.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
right.
be a little
Show
more
that we
self-starter-ish,
can do it.
You know, and go ahead and jump the gun a little bit and make your own opportunities, because then people will come to it.
Yeah,
if the quality is there, people will come.
I agree.
And this newly announced movie that's being done down in Las Cruces, Odd Way Home, I think is going to be, I think people will be looking at that as one of the homegrown independent films.
Yeah.
Because that's all New Mexican.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really looking forward to see how that progresses.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think that's going to be a great film.
Yeah, hopefully, you know, yeah, the movie does well among, like, other movies like Bless Me, Altima. And,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah, exactly.
Which now the premiere is in Texas.
Yeah,
Texas.
No one can figure that
why,
one out.
Why?
It's like, yeah.
Isn't it like, I've never read the story, but I know a couple of people that are from here. They're like, yeah, I grew up reading that story. Fantastic. Are you going to Texas to see it?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And Texas are just
See?
Like, bless me, what?
Yeah,
Texas
yeah.
again.
And Biomass, too. You were in Biomass.
Yes, I was.
And tell us a little bit about that.
Great people, honestly. A lot of the independent community working on that, from the DP to the to the actors, from Julie Lopez to Matt Page, from Anthony Riazzi, who is the director, to Alicia Keys, who was a producer, who's done several, you know, what's the name of a movie she just
Blaze did? You Out.
Blaze You Out, exactly. Blaze You Out. She just produced that movie. Who's I think the movie right now is, you know, touring the film festival circuit, if I'm not mistaken. Great opportunity. I had a lot of fun, and I think the reason why I took it, not only just to have fun, and, you know, because it's also a zombie movie, that's a lot of fun, but the fact that I can be like, okay, let me see how it feels to be directed. Because I always, you know, I usually, like, direct or help produce or AD. I've never acted, and the only times I've acted is, you know, with Leonard and Ryan.
Right.
And film students, and, you know, I'm basically just being, like, a very noisy version of myself when I had, like, 10 drinks.
Yes.
You know? Yes. So, what you're seeing there is not acting. I'm kind of tipsy.
Oh, well, you're boosting the ego quite a bit. That's not you. Yeah. That's not you. That's you times 1,000. Yeah.
I think most of the New Mexico film industry, people have worked on both sides of the camera, and they do everything. Mm-hmm. Just because budgets and interest and getting experience and all that.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, this is great conversation. We're going to take a break and come back, and we're going to be talking about your webisode, Film Students, and how you came about with all of that. And but right now, you're listening to Talk 1260 KTRC Radio. I'm your host, Dirk Norris, and we'll be back in just a minute with Alejandro and Leonard. Back, and you're listening to New Mexico Film Works on Talk 1260 KTRC Radio. My guests are Alejandro Montoya and Leonard Harris, and from Brother Bean Films, and talking about their webisode, Film Students, which is aptly named, I guess. Where'd the name come from?
I was working at Sirius one day, and then we were just like, you know what, we should do something, because there had been a portion of time that we weren't doing anything. You know, we were focused on our jobs, and we're like, we should do something instead of, you know, raising 10 grand to do a short film, 30 grand to do a feature. Let's just do something where we don't have to pay money to do anything. We have a rental house at our disposal. Why don't we just do something? And we did. We just started coming up with, like, what would happen, like a very exaggerated version of ourselves, of like, what would happen if we're film students and we thought we were going to make it big, and then we get to the real world and we're not doing anything.
Right.
And then it started morphing really quickly to, like, simple, like, Wes Anderson-y Kevin Smith conversations, to then the characters adapting situations from their favorite movies, like me chasing Leonard because he stole my beer, and then we're out of nowhere, we're in The Fugitive. And then we're Rocky. Yeah, we get in a fight, so we build a boxing ring out of C-stands and, you know, ratchet straps, and, you know, from there we just started, like, getting more and more ridiculous.
You had Matt Page in one of your episodes.
Oh, yeah.
We did. He was just doing Enter the Dojo before it started.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's kind of like the episode. I was like, I was there with Ryan. I was like, he's actually a really nice guy, but he looks like he's mean. He's a douche. And then it was just like, no, he actually is. And sort of like, hey, Matt, how about you play a really mean version of yourself, and I just hate you, and we don't know why. Yeah. And then, you know, he was like, oh, I'll totally do it, and he was a great sport about it. And then in the recent episode that we just released, what was it, a week ago?
Yeah,
we mentioned him, so in the new episode he comes back, and we find out why I hate him and why he hates me.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. So you have, what, 12 or 13 episodes?
Oh, it's 13 now, right now.
Yeah.
The new one, we've shot half of it. And we can't shoot this weekend because of the 48-hour film festival, but next weekend we'll finish it and start editing it.
So you it's kind of like a serial. You do it as you go along. You make the episodes as you go along.
Yeah, there's no big arch to the storytelling just yet.
Right
now it's pretty loose and cartoonish, and the episode standalone, like episode, what was it, 9?
Which one?
The
Mission Impossible.
Mission Impossible, was that 9? Yeah. You watch that one, and it's a dead-on spoof of the opening scene in MI3, you know, but it's great, and one of our favorites and one of our fan favorites.
Our most viewed.
Yeah, yeah, it's really fun. So we do, we meander. Sometimes it's a narrative, sometimes it's a spoof, sometimes it's something else completely.
Right, and the other way of doing it is shooting all of the episodes at one time and then parsing them out, which some of the other webisode people do, which I guess could lend to more continuity. However, doing it, shooting it each week makes you more spontaneous, and you can respond to people or, you know, your own whims or whatever.
It's helped us because I think when people say that they like the episodes, everybody likes a different episode. Like, Leonard, what's your favorite episode?
Right now, it's still The Fugitive.
Mine's The Fugitive. I know I have people that love the Universal one. Other people like Mission Impossible. And I think that the strongest thing that we have is every episode is shot in a different style. So you see the like I said, like the Kevin Smith-esque, then we go to The Fugitive, which is, you know, more action-packed. Or whatever. Action-packed.
Michael Bay. Yes.
And then, like, episode 12 is very Tony Scott, even colors and everything. And then the one about Shawshank Redemption, we try to shoot more like a drama, you know, like a lot of pans, not quick shots. So we try, and it does help that we release an episode not every week, exactly like you said it, because it gives us opportunities to be like, well, I have this idea. Why don't we shoot it like this, like this, like this? And it's completely different. Not only that, all the episodes are improv. There's no script.
Are you have any expectations for this series? Are you, what is it you get out of it?
Well, as far as expectations, as a matter of fact, we are right now creating a kind of like a Monster Mash episode, which is the last couple narratively constructed piece together, so it tells one long story over the course of like an episode, like a television episode. So it's like 22 some odd minutes that the end product is going to be, just to kind of show that we are capable of doing it, and we can do it very quietly and subtly, which is kind of what we've done. But it's been, you know, contiguous, and it will be, you know, one like long piece, and then from there, you know, take a break, work on some other stuff, and then come back, and we're going to have it perhaps a little more organized. We do plan on plotting and planning and doing it bigger and better. So it's been very indie, very low-key. Right. But because we've gotten such a great response, and because it seems like something that's going to have a life of its own, we really kind of want to pump, you know, some more thought into it.
Terrific, yeah. So that'll be like a second season.
Yes,
yeah, we're thinking of doing the second season. And like Leonard said, we get the five last episodes, we put them together. That's one pilot, and also we have a written pilot that has a complete and different feel of the show.
Where it's
a more serious tone of like comedy drama is like Ed. You know, remember that TV show where it's more like what would happen if these guys do come, and then out of nowhere they've been wasting their time, and it's hit a point where now they have to act. And obviously, it does have a comedy element to it, but also. Sure. The dramatic, where it's like, I'm hitting 32, I still haven't done anything.
Yeah, which to you probably seems foolish to think, but we do. But
no,
we do.
Not at all.
But we're definitely just gonna try to continue on with the archetype. You know, we're using ourselves as the basis of these characters, but we're trying to speak to people not unlike ourselves, people who, you know, hope to make it big, hope to get rich one day, and maybe or maybe haven't quite yet gotten there, you know, and perhaps the older we get, the more we have to reassess it. Who knows? But we're exploring it in that part of the pilot. So it's a different.
So there's a thread of documentary through
oh, definitely. It's always been, always been where it's like, well, we, all of us do film, not only because we're like, oh, well, I get a great pension at the end. No.
We love it.
It's because we love it, and we're like, you know, the heck, I can do this.
Right. What kind of responses are you getting from people? Are they saying, oh, man, I felt exactly that way?
And for film students, because it's been a lot of adventure and fun, we've been getting we get a lot of views. Yeah. It's just started because before it was, you know, 300, 400, but like Leonard said, the Mission Impossible one has like 20,000.
Yeah.
Right. So we're starting to get, you know, quite a bit of views. We have, I don't know, 1,600 subscribers. We have several likes. We have people from we for the last episode, we needed extras, and we were like, we need extras to come at Serious Grippage, and then someone's like, I'll do it. And when I realized that girl was from Kenya, so it's like, well, and then I even told her, it's like, you want someone to pick you up? Yeah. Yeah. And she's like, whoops. Like, she didn't think about that. But we, you know, places that really, you know, like, it's satisfying to have people, like, from Long Island going, I really like your show.
They're excited.
Yeah,
about it.
And
we're like, excited about
never
it.
Been there.
Yeah,
one of the best responses I got when actually the Mission Impossible episode happened, one of my best friends that I grew up with gave me a call. And he's a guy that I've written with that I still work with from time to time. And he told me after he watched the Mission Impossible episode, I wish I were there.
Terrific. We got to run. Tell people where they can find the episodes.
Facebook/filmstudents. YouTube/BrotherBeanFilms, and we have our own website at BrotherBeanFilms.com.
Indeed.
Alejandro, Leonard, I really appreciate you guys coming in. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for inviting us, sir.
Thank you, Dirk.
You're listening to New Mexico Filmworks on Talk 1260 KTRC Radio. I'm your host, Dirk Norris, and we'll be right back with Liz Langston. We're back. I'm your host, Dirk Norris, and this is New Mexico Filmworks on Talk 1260 KTRC. And I've got Liz Langston on the phone. Liz, 11 years ago, turned her attention from her job as a traffic safety researcher to found the 48-Hour Film Project with her filmmaking partner, Mark Rupert. Langston and Rupert produced a late-night talk show, multimedia events, and completed several short films before they tested the 48-hour film concept on themselves and a few friends. The film project grew from a small beginning into the world's largest film competition in 125 cities around the world, with over 50,000 direct participants. To date, there have been over 19,000 48-hour films that have been made. Liz, welcome.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
And that's really impressive. I mean, you took something that went worldwide.
We did, yes. 11 years ago, we never thought it would happen, but we rode that technology wave of everyone being able to get better and better cameras and editing gear, and now filmmaking is like a national pastime.
Anybody can do it. Did you start out wanting to make this an international project?
You know, that never even crossed our minds when we first started. We just thought, oh, we love making films. It's such a rush. It's, you know, you're here with all your friends, and it's just so much fun. So that's where the concept started, and we went from there, and it just grew and grew.
So how did it go overseas? Did somebody contact you, or did you reach out?
Somebody contacted us. We have a lot of, expats who've done it here in America, and they would go over, and then they would say, hey, can I come do it here? And then as that started, then that planted the idea that, oh, well, we could, you know, really grow this thing.
Right. So for those that don't know, give us the premise. How does the whole thing work?
Okay. Teams of filmmakers have 48 hours to make a completed 7-minute film. So they start on a Friday night. They come into our kickoff event, and they draw a genre from a hat. So before they start, they don't know if they're going to be making a comedy, a superhero, a horror film, a romance. So we have 13 genres that they pull from. Then in each city, we assign everybody the same character, prop, and line of dialogue that they have to work into their film in some big or small way. It gives people, you know, just some creative pointers to put their film around. Then they have to write it, shoot it, edit it, and then they turn it in on Sunday night. They have to get it in Sunday night at exactly 7:30. So if they're just even a few minutes late, then they can still screen the films, but they won't be qualified for the judging.
So there's a lot of pressure, not a lot of sleep. What's the ultimate purpose of doing it this way?
You mean of having it be 48 hours?
Right, right.
The beauty of the 48-hour time frame is, first of all, people are able to commit a weekend to a project.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very intense weekend, but also it just forces people to finish things. Many, many people start to make an independent film and never finish.
Oh, right, so okay.
Deadline, yeah, let's make them let go of any kind of perfectionism and just get it done.
Right. And has the quality of the films changed over years?
Oh, it's been amazing. The technical quality is just like night and day from when we started, and people would turn in their films on like VHS tapes. And now people have these beautiful cameras, RED cameras, DSLR cameras, and they look beautiful. And in Albuquerque and in many of our cities, we're on our seventh year here. So as people started the first year, they were just getting used to the concept. And as time's gone on, our teams, our repeating teams, have just gotten better and better.
And what is the length of each movie? It's between...
They have to be between 4 and 7 minutes.
4 and 7 minutes. And when they finish a movie, can they do whatever they want with it? I mean, can it be then submitted to festivals and that sort of thing?
Oh, yeah. We encourage everybody to submit them to film festivals. We try to get them out as far and wide as we can. We put them up on the internet. And then we also do some compilations within our organization to try to get those best films out there, try to get them more viewers. And then also we selected some of our films go on to screen at the National Association of Broadcasters. And our most exciting thing is that 12 of our winning films will go on to screen at Cannes, at the Cannes Short Film Corner.
Oh, that's wonderful. Is there a worldwide competition just for the 48-hour films?
Exactly, yeah. So the winner of Albuquerque will go on to compete against the other 124 cities, wow. And the films will all screen at our end-of-year event called the Filmapalooza. It's going to be in Hollywood this year. We held it in Taos last year. And we have the filmmakers come from all around the world. We screen their films, and there we announce the grand prize winner.
Yeah, I was bummed I wasn't able to make it up to Taos last year. I really wanted to see that. You must have had a pretty good crowd, huh?
Something. Oh, yeah, there was just all this good feeling, and we had people from Mongolia and Kuala Lumpur and Osaka, Japan, and it was just as wonderful, like United Nations of young filmmakers.
That's great. Do the participants tend to be younger, or do you get kind of the whole spectrum of age?
We get all ages. People tend to be like 25 to 40, but we also have people who are seniors, which we welcome. And we also have high schoolers and some college students.
And this year you have just this incredible number of participants.
Yeah, we really do. This year we are up to 51 teams, up from 36 last year.
Wow.
So we've had a giant growth in teams. It's going to be our biggest year ever. And our big news for this year is that we have the best prize that we've ever been able to offer. We've partnered with this television station called True TV. And they want to get ideas for TV shows from people in the middle of the country. So they've partnered with us here in Albuquerque. Our winning team is going to get the opportunity to pitch them 3 ideas for a television show. And whether they take the ideas or not, that winning team gets a $5,000 prize.
Oh, terrific. They just do what they can with pitching this idea. What happens if they decide to take it?
Well, then the team will get further compensated for it, and they'll work it out, and we'll see if there's possibility that the team can actually be involved in the production or not.
Now, is there enough equipment in Albuquerque for 51 crews to be running around making the movies at the same time?
We will see. We'll see. I don't know. All of the rental places have offered us great discounts for our filmmakers, and I think all of the schools have probably been tapped out. And we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Now, does it have to take place in Albuquerque, or can they go anywhere in the state, or how does that work?
Oh, yeah, they could be anywhere. We have one team coming in from Arizona. They're going to fly in for the kickoff and fly back in for the drop-off.
But the filming, does the actual filming have to take place in Albuquerque?
No, it doesn't. It can be anywhere.
Yeah, okay. Well, that sounds really wonderful. As this has kind of progressed, do you see more towns in Albuquerque or in New Mexico being able to participate, or is it?
Well, we like to be in cities of a certain size so that we can get enough teams out.
Right.
So probably not.
So what do you see for the future of the 48-hour film project?
Well, we're going to continue to get bigger and bigger. We're we've been very successful in Asia, and we want to continue that. We're in Beijing, and we want to grow that one. a lot, and then we just want to be able to provide more and more opportunities for our filmmakers. We'd love to have some of our filmmakers be breakthrough filmmakers, you know, like in the Austin way, so that they make films and then other people get opportunities that would come along with that.
Right. What, to what do you attribute the popularity in China?
Well, we're not actually that popular in China. We're just trying to grow it. We're hugely popular in Vietnam and in Kuala Lumpur. Because China has different genres than we do. They tend to have things based on Chinese opera. So we're just trying to grow that. That's our most culturally different city that we have right now, which is why it's of big interest to us.
And the other countries, they can set up different parameters, obviously, for their films, or do they stick pretty much
the way they have? Because it's an international contest, we try to keep the parameters as close as we can. We have to make a few little cultural adjustments. In Israel, we don't start it on a Friday night. And in China, we had to drop some of our genres that didn't make sense to the Chinese people.
Oh. So
the rest of the ones that they kept are the same ones that we have here.
All right. And do you have the opportunity to go to any of these other countries and participate or see what they're doing?
Yes, I went to Italy, which was a lot of fun. I wasn't expecting this, but they asked me to jump up on stage and present this giant check to the winner.
Oh,
and I couldn't read what it said. I didn't even know what I was presenting. I had to present it in English.
What's been the most challenging aspect of the project?
You know, one of the things that's always so controversial is the judging. We do everything we can to make the judging fair, but judging is always a subjective process, so people are always unhappy. There's just not a lot you can do with that.
Yeah, so you can't please everybody all the time. How many judges are judging?
We have 3 judges in each city.
Mm-hmm. And they're local people. I mean, you don't bring people in from outside the area.
Well, sometimes we do.
Uh-huh.
In a town as small as Albuquerque, with such an established film community, everyone knows everyone. So trying to find judges that will be perceived as independent is always a challenge.
Right, right. Liz, we got to go. I appreciate you being on the show. Tell folks real quick, and actually this is going to be airing on Saturday, so it will be the project will be well under its way, but where can people get information?
Okay, well, we'd love people to come to our screening. Our final Best of screening with all of our best films is going to be on Saturday the 28th at the Chemo Theater at 7:30. Tickets are $10. And for information, go to our webpage, 48hourfilm.com/Albuquerque.
Liz, I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you.
This is New Mexico Film Works on Talk 1260 KTRC Radio, and we'll be right back.
You called all your shots, shooting a ball at the corner truck stop. Somehow this don't feel like home anymore.
This is New Mexico Film Works, and we have John Armijo talking about his first film experience. Hi, John.
Howdy, Dirk.
And welcome back from your vacation.
Thank you. Aloha and mahalo.
Okay. So, your first film experience.
Yeah, someone asked me about my first independent film I worked on, so that's my topic.
All right.
Okay, this was in Chicago in 1970. The film was Goodbye, Fat Larry, directed by John Ponnell. I was a still photographer and a PA. In fact, everyone's secondary job on the crew was PA. We had a crew of 12. Dirk, this may run a bit long, so I'll spare you the mystery question today.
Oh, okay. That's quite all right.
This was also my introduction to cinema verite, which means to be true to your story, amongst other things. Cut to Diana, the star of our film, moving out of her apartment, which is owned by Fat Larry. Cut to Diana driving away in her Hertz rental truck. Cut to Fat Larry waving goodbye, hence the title. cut to Diana leaving the city, entering the Kennedy Expressway, driving down the Eisenhower Expressway, exiting the expressway, driving on overpasses, underpasses, stopping at a toll booth, and so on. All the while, Nick, our cameraman, when he wasn't holding on for dear life to the Buick convertible we were in, covered Diana's exit from every conceivable angle one could imagine. Bridges, overpasses, underpasses, and grassy knolls. This was the first time Diana had driven the movie truck on an interstate and was terrified dodging traffic to get the shot for the camera, especially with John yelling out instructions to her on his walkie-talkie. Remember those? Cut to a very angry, and rightfully so, Diana cussing out John for placing her life at risk. Cut to John begging Diana not to quit the film. By the way, we didn't have a permit to shoot on the interstate. When I asked why, the answer was because we were shooting cinema verite style. We also had no idea where Diana was moving to because there wasn't a script, just an outline in John's head. Cinema verite, you see.
Yeah.
Cut to somewhere in Iowa, cut to Nebraska, cut to Kansas. And everywhere we stopped, we filmed Diana doing whatever people do when they go on a road trip. And, of course, Marty, our sound man, recorded everything there was to record, including crickets late at night, just in case we needed them. We did. Our budget was $175,000, but it felt like a lot more. Somewhere in Kansas, John had a eureka moment and called our lawyer, asking him to find us a condo in Aspen, Toot Suite. Cut to downtown Aspen, where construction jobs are digging holes in the ground and Lindy cranes everywhere are blocking out the sky, lifting stuff onto skeletal structures. We're setting up a shot when four very angry-looking individuals came stomping towards us. Turns out they were city councilors. One of them tells us to leave immediately on the premise that we were exploiting Aspen with our crummy movie. John points to all the construction and asks them, who is exploiting whom? Get out of Aspen, said the leader, or I'll call the cops. Cut to Officer A and Officer B. This is where I learned that it's good to have a lawyer, who John is on the phone with. Good old Tony. He calls the mayor, a dentist, whose office is just around the corner from us. Tony explains what's going on and lets him know that we leased a condo for a month, guaranteed, which made the owner a very happy camper, and that we'll be spending a lot more during our stay. After a short council meeting where the mayor reminded the council that this is off-season, the mayor called John to give us his blessing. Cut to the Jerome Hotel Bar, where we are all sipping a well-deserved aperitif after a 9-hour shoot on our first day in Aspen. Cut to the front door of the bar, where in walks Hunter Thompson. What's missing from this short story is a whole bunch of stuff, like the time our equipment truck lost its brake and crashed into, thank God, a tree and not the bottom of the canyon, or the time a real stunt driver crashed Diana's truck into a toll booth, or the time we were hired by Thompson to produce commercials for his mayoral campaign, which he lost by one vote to our friend, the dentist. We think it was the owner of the condo that cast the deciding vote. Also missing is Hertz's attempt to sue us for not getting permission to use the Hertz logo on the Hertz truck we rented. It's good to have a lawyer. Or the two times we almost got thrown in the pokey because we four-walled Denver with posters for the premiere of the film. No permit, you see. Cinema verite. Dirksen said there's been a soft spot in my heart for anyone who attempts to make a film. Kubrick compares it to staging a military operation. Indeed.
No kidding. Of course, things have advanced, so none of that kind of thing happens anymore.
No, you need permits for everything.
Yeah, right.
Well, they call it now guerrilla filmmaking.
Yeah, right. So did you have fun, John?
A blast.
Yeah.
Yeah, we shot for about 2 months, and then oh, the editing process and post-production and then distribute. That's a whole other story.
Yeah. But it did get distributed.
No.
Oh.
We opened and closed in Denver, Colorado, at the most modern and largest theater in town.
And the only theater in town?
No, the largest, the most modern.
Right, okay.
State of the art, gigantic, cavernous. You're going to put four theaters in there.
Terrific, and every seat was filled?
No.
Oh.
But we outsold every other movie that opened that the same day that we did.
Terrific.
And we lasted a month at the theater.
Oh, that's great.
So there you go.
All right, John, thanks very much.
Later.
All righty. And just a reminder to New Mexico film workers, you can list yourself and support services as well on our industry directory on our website, nmfilm.com. And we're in the process of redesigning that website. So hopefully by the end of the month, we'll be live and it will look mucho better. And also, we're going to be sending out a newsletter on a monthly basis. We'll have links up on our Facebook page as well as our website. And you can sign up for our new newsletter, get all the latest happening with the film office and around the state. And I just wanted to mention real quickly the screening of From Zimbabwe to Santa Fe was last night. And I went, wasn't able to get in, sold out, long line, terrific for Christina McCandless, and I just wanted to say congratulations to her. She was one of the New Visions New Mexico winners a year or two ago, and that was a big boost for her film. So you've been listening to Talk 1260 KTRC Radio, New Mexico Filmworks. I'm your host, Dirk Norris, and we'll be back next week.
This ain't no place to lose your mind. This ain't no place to fall behind. Pick up your crazy.